Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety, the podcast from Lighthouse Hockey. My name is Dan Saraceni. Joining me this evening via Skype, as always, is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, we're at the point of the season where every game seems kind of big, and the Islanders have another one Thursday night.
Yeah, and it's what a blessing it is to be in that spot where every game matters, and it's not just about, you know, making your draft position better.
So. I have absolutely no idea what the Islanders' draft position is.
Yeah,
like I was thinking about
me neither
the other day.
I don't know. All I know is they have a first round pick because I want them to use it to get a real live player, which is different than what it usually is like around here.
Yeah, no, right. We'll talk about I guess trade deadline stuff in the coming next week. We're going to come to you guys a little bit earlier next week. We're going to try to get together on Sunday and we'll talk some trade deadline stuff there. That first round pick could definitely be in play to get somebody that could help the Islanders, particularly on offense, where they are struggling a little bit, although they did lose on Tuesday night to Buffalo, which snapped a 3-game winning streak. When we last spoke, they had just lost to the Boston Bruins, who played a very Islanders-style game, you know, didn't give them much on offense. The Islanders didn't kind of play it into their hands a little bit, didn't help themselves, and they ended up losing 3-1. After that, the Islanders reeled off 3 straight wins, a 2-1 shootout win against New Jersey, a 4-3 overtime win against the Colorado Avalanche, and then a 2-1 win in Minnesota against Minnesota at Barclays Center that was sort of vintage for the season, I guess. And then again last night, Tuesday night, they lost 3-1 to Buffalo, again in a game much like the Bruins game, where the Sabres kind of out-Islanders. They just didn't give them anything, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But, you know, it's weird to kind of like come off a 3-game winning streak and be a little bit disappointing, but last night was kind of disappointing, right? I mean, it's a little bit of a shame that they didn't win.
Yeah, it sucks just because of the team it was against, but... I actually didn't think they played terribly at all, again, which is kind of a common theme. I thought I think Butch actually made another salient point, which was he said their bio, I can't remember what word he used, but he said like their biometrics were just like a little bit off. And that's what it seemed like. There are some opportunities that were like just about to kind of turn them to, or like reveal themselves, that a pass in the skates kind of ruined, or just like a weird hop. I didn't think they were that terrible. I think it was like there were a couple individual players. Like I thought Nick Leddy was pretty bad. And
Josh Bailey is really playing it. You know, I don't like to rip on Bailey because, I mean, after 50 years on the team, he still gets pooped on a lot and he's still a good player. But man, he's really, over these last 4 games, he's a guy who has really, really been fighting it. Although without his goal in the shootout, they don't beat the Devils, which started the whole thing in the first place. So, you know, it's other than that.
Yeah, that first really line has kind of hit a little bit of a wall. I think Barzal's still doing his thing. He was a wizard in a few instances last night where I was like, all right, maybe he's just going to win this game for the Islanders on his own. But yeah, Bailey's been tough, and you know, like you just said, it's not fun to pile on him, especially because, you know, like Josh, I want to bury Josh Bailey in Islander. Like he's got a very good chance to be a one jersey guy, and that's a rarity in sports, especially in hockey these days. And so it would be cool if he, you know, gets to that and is still like contributing to all the way to the finish line, which obviously is way down the line. But I think Trotz might start thinking about some things. That it's tough because that second line has been so good together. They were probably the best line again last night. Or I don't know if you can call them they're the second line because Matt Barzal's not on them. But they've been awesome. I guess you could call them the UFA line because all 3 of them are UFAs at the end of the year.
I was going to say, you're talking about Nelson, Bailey, Lee, and Eberle. Yeah, all the UFA guys. But yeah, the 4 games actually were kind of a set, and last night's game against the Sabres was kind of the same. You know, it's hard to say that they played that poorly, but in all 4 of them, I shouldn't say that. In against the Devils and Avalanche and Sabres, they just weren't sharp in the first couple of periods, and I think that's the way it was last night. I mean, the game against the Sabres was probably as boring, if not the most boring game they've played all season. It was not.
It went so quick
game.
Too.
It was really fast.
There were like four whistles in that game.
I don't like to call out refs because that's a job I would never want. But you're telling me the Sabres didn't get whistled for one penalty in that game? Seriously, like that's either a great job by them or a very very poor job by the Islanders. But like you said, like Barzal had a couple of shifts there where he was kind of all over the place. The Nelson line had a couple of good looks, but didn't get anywhere. And I don't know. Whenever a team doesn't get called for one penalty, I don't know. That's a little suspect. It's a little bit weird. But, you know, against the Devils, they were kind of slow for the first two periods. You can say that the Devils had the better of play, but they were tied. Thomas Greiss was excellent. The Islanders had a really good third, but they couldn't break through. Corey Schneider made like a million saves in that game. Even Steve, who wrote our recap, was like, Corey Schneider should have won that game by himself because he was really good. And he stopped the Islanders and everything. And the OT was all Islanders, basically. There wasn't really much. The Devils didn't have anything. And then Bailey scored in the shootout. So, you know, all's well that ends well, but it wasn't a great performance. The power play went 0-for-4 there, too. A couple of nights later against Colorado during the matinee, the Avalanche had a 2-0 lead, which was kind of weird and definitely had the better of play through most of the first two periods. But after the second goal, the Islanders, it was all Islanders. And at the end, it, you know, stats wise, it seemed more like an Islanders kind of game. They sort of slowly took the advanced metrics over and eventually ended up outpossessing the Avalanche. But they needed a little bit of help. Eberle tied it. Bailey tied it. Eberle had another goal. And then Ryan Pulock had two goals, including the overtime winner, which was great. I mean, it was awesome. I mean, it would have been better had the game not been tied, but hey, it's a Western Conference team. Who cares about giving up that overtime goal, that tying goal? It's fine, giving up the extra point. But yeah, that was a great game for Pulock, and I'm sure a lot of Western Conference people were like, who the hell is this guy? But he's pretty good. And then, so that was matinee number one. And then matinee number two was the next day, 3:00 against Minnesota. I was there. I was proud to say I didn't jinx them because they won that game. And that was more of sort of a vintage Islanders performance from this season. They really ran over the Wild for the better part of the first 2.5 periods. Matt Barzal took an ill-advised penalty halfway through the third. Barry Trotz wasn't happy about it. That gave Minnesota a little bit of life. There was a couple of goal mouth scrambles that I think even right now, I watched a game in replay the next day, and I still have no idea how the puck didn't go in. Maybe the Wild were just kind of tired or not feeling it. But Thomas Greiss was great, and Anthony Beauvillier had a goal. Devontae's had a goal. That was it. And, you know, it was as classic an Islanders performance. Minnesota really had nothing going on in the first two periods. It was actually kind of beautiful to watch, and I was there with my friend and his two sons, who are, I think, 9 and I want to say 6, and I was enjoying it. I don't know if they enjoyed it, the defensive struggle, but, you know, we had a good time. It was Star Wars night. We got Chewbacca beer cozies. We saw some guys walking around dressed like Stormtroopers and Jedi, so that was kind of cool. But it was fun. It was a good night, and, you know, had you told me that I would enjoy a 2-1 defensive battle on a Sunday afternoon in February that, you know, gave the Islanders a 5-point lead into first place in the division, I probably would have told you you were crazy, but that's where I was Sunday, and I couldn't have been happier. It was great.
It was that game reflected the time and temperature and like general like atmosphere. It was just like it was as Sunday afternoon February of a game as you can get. It was just they just like, you know, I thought I was riveted. I was like, this. It's just, it's really strange because we haven't really seen a team like this. But you could say the Laviolette team was structured well, but that was in a different NHL where you were allowed to clutch and grab when a slash was a slash and a hook was a hook. In this NHL, we haven't seen this version of a team, and it's really just riveting to watch those type of games where, you know, you don't want to jinx it and say, yeah, they're just not going to score tonight. Or they're only going to score one. Like, you know, once you get that one goal lead, it's over. But that's what it felt like. That Wild game. I think there was that one Devils game where the Islanders ended up scoring 3 or 4. I felt the same way.
Was that the Barzal one?
Yeah.
Like, where he had the breakaway goal? Yeah.
Yeah. Like that game. Like, there's just been games like that where it's just like that. They just didn't. That other team didn't stand a chance. You almost feel bad. You know, I actually don't feel bad, but you wonder like what, because you've watched the Islanders play those games. I watched the Islanders play that game against the Devils, you know, in the early part of like, or like the second half of the first decade of the millennium, when the Brodeur teams, we've seen those games that we've talked about, the Alan Rourke game on this podcast mm-hmm. before, where he mitted an own goal and that was it. You just knew the game was over because the Devils were up 1-0 and they were just going to strangle you for the rest of the game. And that's from this side of the ledger, it's a lot more interesting, and you pick up the nuance in it than you would the other side, where you just get frustrated.
Yeah, and I mean we've talked about it before. Like, we've never seen a team like this. If you've been watching the Islanders, I mean, I've been watching them longer. You've been watching them for 20 plus years. I've been watching them for 30 plus years. There are people listening to this right now that have been watching them for 40 plus years. And I can honestly say that we've never seen a team like this. Even the Dynasty team, like, yes, they were obviously very good defensively. They had good goaltending. I mean, again, for the era, don't look at the stats, because the stats for 80s goalies don't really match up with today's goalie stats. But, you know, they could be a very good, tight defensive team. But, I mean, they also could score goals in buckets. And that was, you know, they weren't never – you know, if you were going to shut out the Islanders, you were going to have to put in a lot of work. This team, and it was, I believe, John Cooper that said it in an article, I believe, by Arthur Staple of The Athletic, who basically said, Cooper said, they just look to score one more than the other team, and that's it, and that's all you need. And so far, it's working for them. However, having said that, a little ball more offense would be preferable. And, you know, it's one thing to win in a shootout 2-1. Obviously, they came back to beat the Avalanche, who've had goaltending problems all year long. And then the Wild, Devan Dubnyk was great, you know, and to muster two goals against him was enough. But, you know, against the Sabres, you know, a team, you know, they're on the playoff bubble. You expect a little bit more offense. And it's pretty clear that some of the lines here are struggling. You know, Casey Cizikas has had a great season, but, you know, you really can't count on that particular line for offense. And he was the only guy who scored a goal. He tied the game just at the end of the first period on Tuesday against Buffalo. You know, Barzal had a couple of good shifts. They weren't sharp as a whole, like you said, or like Butch said. You know, they were just kind of a tiny little step behind for most of the game. The third period, they were better, but it wasn't enough. And the Sabres eventually got the insurance goal, but they definitely need more offense. And right now, I would say that the Barzal line, it kind of needs more consistency. You know, Michael Del Col is playing up there now, and he's playing fine, but he's not showing up on the scoreboard, which is a problem. And then the Nelson Eberle Lee line, which you were talking about, has been playing well. They played great in the Minnesota game and combined for exactly zero goals. Nelson, he had three or four beautiful looks, and each one of them was kicked out or something and disappeared. And then, you know, Lee had a couple, I think, chances the third yesterday too, but he's kind of dependent on the other guys. So if, you know, one guy's working, the other guy, Lee, is the beneficiary a lot of times of that. So that's where they kind of are. And then you got the third line, which has Beauvillier on it, who seems to work well with Filppula and Komarov. And at the end of the day, this is a team that needs offense. And with the trade deadline a week away, that's kind of, I think, where everybody's mind is going, like, okay, they can play defense. We got that. Like, we've watched it for 50-odd games now, almost 60 games, and they got that down on lock. There are some blips here and there, but generally speaking, they got the defense down. The defensemen play well. The goalies are playing well. Who is going to score goals for this team to get them into the playoffs and then eventually into the playoffs? That is the big question right now, you know?
Right. I think it's actually as well-timed an offensive slump as you can get because it just says, all right, like, here's exactly – we're just showing you what we need. It's kind of, the Islanders were shooting hot for you know, the first couple months of the season. That's gone away. Valtteri Filppula isn't scoring every time he puts the puck towards net. Which,
I can't believe
that
doesn't
continue. It's surprising to me for a guy like that. I think Nelson has been really, really good still. That shift, he and Cizikas had a great shift in overtime that led to the Pulak goal. Against the Avalanche, and I've just been impressed with Brock. You just notice him and we talk about him a lot. Like, the fact that you notice Brock Nelson, I think that was the problem, right? For the last two seasons, he just goes invisible for a while. Like, you notice him every game.
Yeah,
I think the same is
sure.
Lee's definitely also not benefiting from a power play that's clicking at any level whatsoever, which is so frustrating. And I think so. Yeah, then they got like Beauvillier and Dal Col. It seems like whoever is playing with the Fix It Felix line is playing better because maybe they just aren't, you know, worried about that part of the game. I think, you know, Komarov said to, I guess it was Butchie who was getting the quotes from him before that game yesterday. And like, yeah, you know, we play a simple game. We're not very skilled hockey players. So we let those guys do what they're doing and we take care of the, like the kind of I's and T's. And that's going to work for a young player. And I think Trotz and identified that. And well, you know, that's another line that definitely can use an offensive upgrade, but I don't think it's going to ever happen, especially well this season at least. So I think it's a pretty glaring need is right there at the top, that top wing position. And, you know, it's Lou Lamoriello. This is our first go round with him. And we're starting to, every writer, every hockey writer loves to say, oh, it's Lou Lamoriello. So we have no idea what to set, what's going to happen, which is awesome. Because with Gar Snow, they said the same thing. It was very different, you know, tone and whatever. But I think Lou is, people always say like, Lou, we trust. I'm very excited to see what he does. I think he's got a pretty clear picture. The slump has painted a clear picture of what exactly this team needs to improve upon on whatever it is, the 25th.
Right. And you know, it's funny you bring up that the Fix It Felix pair, as Barry Trotz called them, of Filppula and Komarov, because they do play a simple game, and you could say the same for the fourth line too. I mean, they played their game in all four of those games. There was really no difference in any of them, and Cizikas again scored against the Sabres. Whereas the top two lines, and Trotz called it out too. Again, I've said this before, but it's really weird to like think of something during a game and then have the coach echo those exact sentiments after the game. But he said, you know, they got too cute. They tried to be too fancy, and that's not their game. And you know, it was throwing them off. And you could see that Barzal was trying to sneak in that extra pass, or Nelson was trying to sneak in that extra little dipsy doodle here, which, you know, seemed like a good idea at the time to kind of get a little bit open, but that's not how they've won so far this year. So they need to get back to those sort of simple times and simple play. And that's got to start Thursday night against the Columbus Blue Jackets, who are right now 5 points behind the Islanders in third place for the in the Metro Division. I don't know what the Penguins are at now, but they're right there. They're 5 points behind the Islanders. The Caps are 3 points, and so it's kind of huge. I mean, the Islanders aren't going to lose first place if they lose the game, but you know, this is a team you might potentially see in the playoffs. Once again, like the Sabres and like the Bruins, who are obviously the best example of this. They're a team that excels not giving you much. So this is, in a way, kind of a perfect way to get, you know, to kind of drive home the point that Trotz was trying to make again after the Sabres game, in which, like, we need to play our game. That's not fancy. That is, you know, defensive-minded, and then get the opportunities and bury them. And there's really no better team to do that against than the Blue Jackets, who, again, are going to be desperate, so it's not going to be easy, but that's the kind of team that isn't going to give you much. And so here come the Islanders. You know, they should be bracing for a 1-0 or 2-1 game, because that's probably what's going to happen. And if it doesn't happen, somebody's having a bad night. Hopefully it's Columbus, but, you know, could be you too. We never know.
Yeah, I think they've won a couple in a row now, like four or five for the Blue Jackets.
They shut out the Caps the other night. So
yeah, yes. I had kind of written them off, I guess, right before our last episode, because I saw where they were and just the whole drama surrounding Panarin and Bobrovsky. Like, you know, this just looks like a team that just is not going to be able to withstand the 82-game marathon, plus the pressures from the Canadian media, who love paying attention to the Blue Jackets. You'd think Columbus was Hamilton or something, with the way, you know, that the coverage they get because of Panarin and Bobrovsky, who unbelievably have yet to have been labeled enigmatic, the two of them. It's crazy. New era we're living in.
I'm surprised they haven't orchestrated a trade of the two of them to Montreal or Toronto. Not that either team needs either of those guys, but the way you say it, like, you know, that they've focused on them so much with these two players that I'm surprised they haven't tried to like force them to Winnipeg or Vancouver to try and kind of like boost them up, you know.
Well, if you have been listening or reading what these guys, the TSN insiders and Sportsnet and Athletic Canadian insiders have been saying, Mark Stone to Winnipeg is a done deal because he's from Winnipeg. So,
oh, I just seen like that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. He loves Winnipeg. He loves being a Winnipeg boy, a Manitoba guy. So this would mean the world for him because he grew up watching that team that played in Atlanta while he was growing up. So it's amazing.
You know who else is a Winnipeg guy? Barry Trotz. You know where he coaches? Long Island. So I'm just gonna say that. But anyway, so.
Yeah, they're out of control already. It's great.
So the Blue Jackets are going to be a tough out for sure. The game after that is a Saturday night game, possibly the final game in Barclays Center, and we're going to talk a lot about arena stuff in a little bit after we talk about this game here, but is against the Edmonton Oilers. The Oilers right now are playing the Penguins. Again, I'm not sure what the score is there. I know that speaking of Canadian writers, Mark Spector of the Edmonton, he's Sportsnet. He's already complaining about Connor McDavid not playing defense, which is, that's totally a problem to worry about. But that's going to be, I don't want to put too fine a point on it. I don't want to put too much pressure on it or build anybody up or build myself up. But the Oilers play Friday night in Raleigh. They then have to fly to Brooklyn to play the Islanders the next night in a home game. The Islanders are going to be off in possibly the last game in Barclays Center before the Islanders take off on a Western Canadian road trip. This has to be a layup for the Islanders. That doesn't mean they can take them lightly, but this has to be a game where they just come out, much like, again, one of these games you were talking about earlier, where they just come out, stomp on them early, the first two periods, suck the life out of them, and make that third period kind of just a matter of course, just to kind of put a point on it. That has to be a game they have to win. The Blue Jackets game is going to be tough, and if I'm going to be honest, it could kind of go either way. Obviously, I prefer the Islanders win it, but it could go either way. The Blue Jackets need the points too, so it's going to be tough. But that game against the Oilers, you got to have that. Like, you have to take that. There's being served up on a platter, and the Islanders have to win it in that situation before they go off on a road trip and play the Oilers in their hometown, but also the Flames and the Canucks as well.
Yeah, I think before I left work, I saw the odds for that Blue Jackets game. The Islanders were slight underdogs, so whatever.
Makes sense. I mean, yeah, they're on the road.
Road, and they're probably teams talent-wise that are pretty similar, and obviously goaltending. Bobrovsky has a great track record, but let's just assume hypothetically they lose that game. Then they're staring, like you said, the next game is against the Oilers. That is the fix it Felix game, basically, because you're then staring a 3-game losing streak and you're going away, and all of a sudden it's going to be you can't let the wheels come off. They're getting away, they're going into Canada where they'll get a little bit more attention from the media. That game against the Oilers is going to be pretty damn important in a very sneaky way that, if you wouldn't have circled it for any other reason that, hell, Connor McDavid's coming to town. Like, maybe it'll be cool to watch him. I think was it last year you and I went to that game where, it was last season, right? It was the Connor McDavid's coming to town. The team sucks. They're not going to make the playoffs, but let's go watch Connor McDavid, win the game in overtime against us.
They gave out free tickets and we met our friends from Toronto who we can't talk to now. There you go. But you're 100% right. Like, this game in the grand scheme of things probably doesn't mean a whole lot except for the situation in which it does. I guess also what I'm trying to say is, if you we're going to go to a game, this would be a great game to go to. Like, if you're a New Yorker, if you're a Manhattanite, you're in Brooklyn, you're in Queens, you're in Jersey, this is a good game to go to. Like, just make the time because they might not be back here. And I'm just saying, obviously I'm just talking out of my behind, but it's possible that this is the last game they play in Brooklyn. Maybe it's not. You never know. But if it is, you'll want to have been at this game. And hopefully, big sellout crowd, big Islanders win to propel them on their Western Conference road trip to parts unknown and 10 p.m. starts that I know you enjoy. You love those 10 p.m. starts.
Yeah, I do. And I love it's not the same at the new Edmonton Arena or whatever, but the ice the ice at Rexall has always been great. And games at the Saddle Dome are just fun to watch because the aesthetic of them is great, and Harvey's just walking around doing his thing.
That the game against the Canucks on Saturday, that's at 10:00. That must be Hockey Night in Canada game. I mean, that's kind of like a big.
Yeah, I guess it deal. Is.
Wow! Oh, look at that, Matt Barzal getting the BC boy. Actually, somebody else too. Taves, right? Isn't Taves a
yeah, he
PC
is.
Guy? Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, they I don't know if they'll know that guy exists until they show up. Right. But yeah, that Barz, I didn't even think about the Barzal thing. So, yeah, that won't be fun.
No. All right, so let's talk about some fun stuff, because you found an article, or I should say you brought an article to a lot of people's attention. And when I tell people at the end of the episodes that you got to follow Mike on Twitter, this is exactly what I'm talking about, because he finds this kind of stuff that a lot of other Islanders people will not find. So when I tell you to follow Mike at the Big Lebowski on Twitter, I mean it. You should follow him on Twitter at the Big Lebowski, because this article from horseraceinsider.com is wonderful. It's a treasure trove. It's by Mark Berner, a guy who we talked about last year, who's the sort of Belmont insider guy. So he knows a lot of people in Belmont Park and talks a lot of people in New York Racing Association. I almost said Alliance, not Alliance, Association. And, you know, there's nothing really too crazy in the article. It's really just about how this is kind of a done deal. Like, nobody's really said anything. They can't really announce it for various reasons. But basically, this arena is a done deal. And the meetings that they've had at the Elmont Library, and people can voice their opinions, are just sort of a dog and pony show. But that's just the sort of beginning before all kinds of fun stuff happens. And I mean, do you want to walk us through it? Because there's a ton of really cool stuff in this article, and it's all good. And it's funny, because we haven't had a lot of like arena drama this season, which has been a wonderful oasis, you know, and thank God we haven't had it. But this is sort of fun arena drama where it's, you know, nobody's being embarrassed or anything, except for, I guess, one guy. But it's been fun. So I don't know, what was your favorite part of the whole thing? I think I have a guess, but I'm going to ask you anyway.
Yeah, so I saw this from Islanders Reddit, the user's name I think was Fire Islander. So the article claims, and this Mark Berner, who I've now spoke to a little bit, and I've heard from several different people, is like thorough as thorough gets, and has a great sources, especially in this space, the space being the Belmont arena stock. Said that Bruce Ratner poured concrete into toilets in the executive suites at Nassau Coliseum so that they were useless, to make sure that the Islanders would always play in Brooklyn. And if you read the article, you're reading through it, and it's basically, this whole article is about how everything is just, they're just waiting to basically sign the dotted line for this thing, and the shovels are going to get in the ground. And then this matter-of-fact paragraph brings this to light, and I'm just like, how is this not a bigger deal? Like, that is the craziest thing I've ever – this whole saga has been just one crazy thing after another, and it's all these people straddling the fine line between shady practices and criminal practices. And this one is just maybe the most outlandish thing I've read in this whole saga. So I did a little bit more digging and spoke to some sources and stuff around the Islanders and whatever, and they all basically point to this. Jim Baumbach, who tweeted out that, because we were, you know, Islanders, a couple people on Islanders Twitter and I were trying to figure out what the hell was going on. Obviously, this is, you don't have a billionaire pour concrete down a Coliseum at the building he owns to force a professional hockey team that he has a stake in or whatever. He doesn't have an ownership, but he obviously means a lot to his bottom line, to force him into the other building that he owns without, you know, getting covered or whatever. So Randy Marshall and Jim Baumbach, who've done a really good job for Newsday covering kind of the political beats in sort of connected to the new Belmont Arena, did a little digging, and BSE, Ratner's organization, obviously denied it. And that's obviously what they're going to do, but it seems like this is actually a real thing. So coincidentally, at the last game I was at the Coliseum against the Kings, I had decent seats. I'm looking up to the left, and I hear these two people talking behind me about how, why aren't those suites being used? If you're facing the goal the Islanders shoot at twice, they'd be on your left. And obviously an upper decks, whatever, they're on your left up in the gods, and you're like, I was looking at him like, holy shit, she's right. There's nothing it's just like kind of blacked out. Like it looks like the Oakland A's tarp without the A, big A. And I just was thinking, oh, you know, maybe it's, you know, the Kings are here, or they didn't sell them. Whatever. Maybe there just wasn't that, they're there for the press. There wasn't that many press. I don't know. And then this came up, and then somebody, I can't remember who it is on Twitter, I feel bad now, brought that up, and I was like, oh my God, that's right. I remember that conversation now from the game, and it's ludicrous. I don't know how else to say it. And the fact that, like, I know, like, the Newsday people were kind of joking around about it, and sure, it's like, it's a non-story that probably because they own this building, they can do whatever the hell they want to the building, but it's very, very Islanders, and nobody is. Yesterday was just a really great day to be an Islander fan, because of that.
Right. Yeah. It was like I said. Like, I mean, we've all lived through arena drama a lot, and it's sadly derailed a bunch of seasons. Unfortunately, that, you know, we end up paying more attention to these sort of suits and these people doing a lot of talking and boardrooms and, you know, zoning and things like that. Kate Murray and Mangano and, you know, all these people that we don't want to talk about, having instead of talking about players on the ice. And so this thing. And again, the story itself is totally fine. Like, it's basically just saying what we all kind of assume, which is that this arena is a done deal, and they're just waiting for the right time to announce that it's going to be done. And, you know, again, the meetings and the comments and stuff really aren't much of anything at this point. They're just kind of, you know, window dressing before the final sign off happens. But yeah, you know, there are these little bon mots in there, these little tidbits that make it funny. And what's funny is that it seems like, the fact that it's a done deal are what makes these tidbits funny. And so it is drama, and that's the title of the article, is drama surrounding Saratoga, Belmont, and the Islanders arena. But, you know, it's still drama nonetheless, but it's drama we can all laugh at. And the actual paragraph is the way Ratner, you know, kind of went about the renovation of Nassau Coliseum, like you said, in a way to kind of keep the Islanders in Brooklyn and not make them want to go back to the Coliseum. And he wrote, Ratner decreased Nassau Coliseum seating capacity to below NHL standards and was so petty to pour concrete down the toilets in executive suites, rendering them useless. Ratner did this to ensure the Isles would play in Brooklyn. What Ratner did not bet on was that the Islanders fan base would prefer to play at Nassau Coliseum, concrete toilets be damned. Because they didn't want to go out to Brooklyn anymore and were kind of tired of the commute, tired of the weird seats, tired of paying extra money, and just tired of the whole thing, to be blunt. Again, I say that as a person that likes going to games in Brooklyn, but it was pretty obvious pretty early that this wasn't going to last for a long time. And, you know, came for me, it took a while to realize that, but at this point, you know, we can't really fight City Hall. It is what it is. And once Belmont opens, all of these questions will be done. The other part I liked about this was it talked about, you know, what could happen for the playoffs, and it mentioned that if, you know, the problem is that for first round playoff games, it's done by local broadcasters and local media. You're only hosting, you know, the journalists from the one other team. But once you get into the second round, now the national broadcasters start showing up, and the Coliseum, unfortunately, just doesn't have the infrastructure to support that sort of thing. And it's going to cost money. You know, maybe it comes from Nassau County, maybe it comes from the owners, maybe it comes from somebody, but it's going to cost money maybe to get the Coliseum up to snuff where, you know, Sportsnet or NBC or whoever can come in and, you know, do the job for a potential seven game series. Now, obviously, look, we're talking about 2 months from now. So there's a lot that can happen between now and then, but it is a concern, I suppose. Also, it recounts the very famous story of Charles Wong not wanting to do business with Senator Al D'Amato's brother and basically derailing the entire Lighthouse Project, which is a story that we've known for a long time. It's not a secret. It's out there. You know, people have been talking about it for a long time, but never fails to amuse. Let's put it that way. But it's an interesting story. I've read it like three times now because I almost feel like I'm having withdrawals from this kind of stuff. Because there was once a time when like we read stories like this every week, And everything was like, oh, my God, oh, my God. Oh, by the way, the comments section in this story is even more gold. You should check that out for even more stuff. Berner's an Islanders fan. He clearly, he's talking like an Islanders fan down there. So good on him. But, yeah, it's a fun story. And it's great that the team is in first place and this arena is apparently on the way. And we can actually laugh about it, which is what we probably should be doing at stories like this.
It's, I think, one of my favorite kind of ironic parts of the story is that by shortchanging the improvements or by cutting corners, Ratner actually added more Coliseum nostalgia and charm into the Coliseum. and made, people came back to the building and were like, they did a great job renovating this place because they didn't really do anything.
Yeah.
And so he thought what he was doing was going to keep them out, but instead it just drew more people in and made it more, made it more charming. Like, it's unbelievable that's, you know, what it is. And the fact that now I can look up at those dark executive suites and just say, one of those suites, there was a guy, he probably didn't do it, but he probably had a fixer go up there and dump concrete into a toilet up there. It just adds to the Coliseum folklore, which once again adds to why we love it so much and why people want to come out there and want the playoff games to be there. Mark actually thought at first I was like going on some crazy tirade against him, and I had to hash it out with him. You know, I tweeted, I'm like, no, like, I think this is great. Like, this is awesome. Thank you for like doing this, whatever. Mm. And we've talked, we're now good friends. he was thanking me and at Ole Kavasha, who's a great follow on Islanders Twitter, for welcoming him to Isles Twitter. And it was just like the fact that I'm sure, like, if this got picked up by a bigger outlet or whatever, it would have turned into like kind of annoying stuff. But the fact that this is kind of just like it buzzed around a little bit yesterday in the Islander ecosphere was fun, and then it got us to puck drop, where another very Islanders thing happened, where Shannon Hogan was doing the pregame show, which was on MSG Plus channel 72 for me on Optimum, and then right before the actual proper broadcast started, the game broadcast, she said, this game is actually going to be on MSG Plus 2, so go get out your remote controls and go to MSG Plus 2. And it seemed like every Islanders fan was not prepared for it. So we were all scrambling to get the game on the right channel. I ended up, the Cablevision had like the wrong game listed. It had the Buffalo Islander game listed for tonight on one channel. Huh. And then it had the channel was actually on was something else, I think a Devils game. So the channel below that, which I assumed was because it was the first MSG Plus Plus or whatever, the first one, was showing an exhibition tennis match which featured Marty Fish. And then it just abruptly cut to the Westchester Knicks like opening montage. And it was just a very Islanders day.
This is all news to me because I came home from work and just as about 7:05 was when I got home, and I've been watching pretty much every game on MSG Go. So this is all news to me. That's unbelievable. So you went from watching the Islanders pregame show to watching about three or four different other events.
The first place you actually Islanders find too. The other game. Like the only team in New York that is relevant.
That's pretty. Having the Westchester Knicks there is just the perfect icing on the cake.
Like, there was a part of me that I just wanted to keep watching. You know, like Friday, do you remember the Friday night Knicks? Like, I think they probably still do it, like with the music or whatever that comes on. And I think it's like Robert Randolph's and the Family Band that does it. It was like basically the minor league version of that. And it was kind of cool. There was like some cool B-roll of Westchester graffiti. I was like, I'm kind of enjoying this. I might watch this to the end of the montage and then hopefully at some point find the Islander game. And then I ended up finding it. And
that's so funny.
Yeah, I saw Michelle Catalano on Twitter. She was like, "Yeah, my I couldn't find it either. My mom was the one who found it first. I had to call her to get the channel. It was really funny."
That is really funny. That reminds me of the great time when the Islanders were bumped for some like Division III. It wasn't just division. It was like a Pac-10 basketball game between like two non-playoff teams or something. It was like, what is happening? Right, where is my team? Why am I watching was like, I don't know, Arizona A&M or something. It was some weird team. Kevin Schultz remembers this on Twitter, I'm sure. But it was really weird. Yeah, the fun stuff that happens with the Islanders on MSG Network never ceases to amaze. But again, like, it's funny now because the team is in first place. Everything is going well. You know, we can laugh about it. But, like, if they were in last place, you'd be like, well, this is just another, you know, slap in the face. When will the indignity end? That kind
that's
of thing.
That's a good point.
But it is funny that absolutely happened. Speaking of MSG shows, my wife and I were watching the finale of Hell's Kitchen, which is still on. I don't know if people still watch it. It's on with Gordon Ramsay on Friday nights. And they have chef's tables where, like, celebrities or whoever will come and sit at the chef's table. And then, of course, you know, they get attended to by the chef contestants there. And one of them was J.B. Smoove. And my wife was like, who the hell is J.B. Smoove? Because I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe. And I was like, oh, he's a comedian. He was on Curb Your Enthusiasm. And then all of a sudden it came rushing back to me. And I went off on a whole thing about he had a show on MSG called Four Courses with J.B. Smoove. And he would talk to people. And I saw his commercials 100,000 times every Islanders game. So I don't think she expected that much information on this man. But and after a while, I caught myself and I'm like, oh, well, you know, he's a funny guy. He's a really funny guy. That's about all I could tell you. So
it's good for JB for turning his comedy career and his Curb Your Enthusiasm acting career into just getting fed really nice meals all the time.
pretty much. He's funny because, like, I told my wife, I'm like, he's one of these guys that I don't know if he actually tells jokes, but just the way he says anything is funny. So he's one of these guys he's a funny storyteller, baby.
Got a great shtick. Big JB guy.
Pretty much. But anyway, so that was kind of funny. I had total, like, it's one of those things where, like, I had totally removed knowledge of that show from my brain. And then all of a sudden, within an instant, it all came back to me. And I was like, oh, my God, I can't remember. I just remember. Anyway, so check out that article by Mark Berner on horseraceinsider.com. It'll put a smile on your face, specifically because it says pretty much the Islanders, you know, the arena is a done deal. Mark's a well-connected guy. I mean, he had a bunch of scoops going on during the selection process and all that stuff way back when. So, I mean, I have no reason not to believe him. I want to believe the whole concrete in the toilet story, which is why I'm calling this episode Concrete in the Toilets. It's very rare that I have a title for an episode before we actually talk, but it's going to make my job a lot easier. But I couldn't read that and not immediately call this episode Concrete in the Toilets because that's just we should probably change the name of the podcast. Concrete in the Toilets.
I hope it does start to take a life of its own. Because it would just be a fun thing, you know. It'd be a fun, you know. Detroit had they have the octopus,
right?
You know, what if the Islanders just have, like, toilet seats or something? It'd be fun. There was just a lot. I always thought that, you know, when the Islanders, you know, if ever anything was thrown on ice, besides beer bottles, it would be bagels or whatever. But toilet seats would work too. I think, you know, if maybe they could sign a couple spots, like they used to have. Back in the Charles Wong era, the funstockings.com was, like, their big sponsor.
Oh, right, yeah.
Right by the middle. Yeah, funstocks, whatever it was, right in the middle of the ice. And I always thought that was funny for people who were watching maybe on NHL Network or something, and they show the highlights of the Islander game. And, you know, you go from Budweiser and Bud Light or whoever for Rangers or Penguins or the bigger market teams, and then you show the Islanders, and it's just like, yeah, like, come get fun stockings or something.
Yeah. So, well, that's why I, you know, being at Barclays Center, always it threw me for a loop because they had, like, actual sponsors on the ice there as opposed to whoever the Islanders had at the time.
Yeah.
Rob the Plumber, what was that guy? Was Steve the Plumber, whatever his name was. But anyway. So what are all right. So we talked about the last games. We talked about the next couple of games. We talked about the arena. What else is there weren't any other. There were a couple of minor trades. Made the Canadians picked up Nate Thompson, former Islander, right? So Mark Bergevin likes his fourth liners, and so he's got another one. The trade deadline stuff is ramping up. Elliot Friedman had a great 31 thoughts. Nothing really Islanders related, but they've been called big game hunters. They're kind of out there in the weeds. Last week's 31 thoughts had a great story about how he told the Vancouver Canucks before he made the Corey Schneider trade that if the word of that trade got out even a minute before the trade happened, he would call and cancel the trade, which is why you're probably not going to hear about a trade going down before it actually goes down So we'll have to see how that goes. But yeah, it's kind of the calm before the storm, right? Yeah, that is a classic. Oh, I totally forgot. Speaking of luxury suites, apparently the game I was at also had Kyle Dubas, Toronto Maple Leafs general manager, chilling with Lou and catching up in a suite possibly right below my seats, which I found out the next day. So I don't know. Could have just been to say, hey, how's it going? Or could have been a huge deal in the works. You never know. Also, I told this story in the comments for the recap for that game. But the third period, it was a stoppage, and I hear this cheer go up. And I'm in section 220, so it's the upper deck, kind of on the corner. And I hear this cheer go up from down below near the glass. And I look down there, and John Ledecky is taking his seat. And he just got like a cheer from the people around him. And I was flabbergasted. I was like, is this really happening? that's all it is. The guy just came in and sat down and took a seat. I told my friend who was sitting a couple of seats away from me. I'm like, I can't believe Islanders fans cheering an owner just for sitting down in his seat. Like that's where we are right now. That's where we are at this point in the season. I had never seen anything like that and never thought I would in my entire life, but it happened. I mean, I want to believe it happened.
Yeah,
I'm not wrong.
moments like that are so great because they bring you they always say like, "Oh, come back down to earth, come back down to earth." But we shouldn't be. Like we should be up there where the season has taken us. And that season kind of does the opposite. That moment kind of takes the opposite effect where you're like, "Oh, like it is tough. Like they haven't really accomplished anything yet. The playoffs are going to be a gauntlet." And then something like that happens and you realize where the Islanders are and where everyone expected them to be, where we all expected them to be, how down we were in July. And you're like, all right, like I should get back up there. Bring me back to not Earth, and moments like there have been so many moments like that from the Barry Trotz chants, like his postgame press conferences where you're just like nobody's and we say it all the time here. No Islander fan is really taking it for granted. And that's just like another moment, the nice moment where it's just like, yeah, you know what? I'm just going to soak this in. That's awesome. Like when you see the the pictures of Ledecky, like was riding the train with fans or whatever too. It's like you're just like, yeah, this is great. This is the season of like that dreams are kind of made of. And God, there's going to be more. The best part is there are going to be more moments like that most likely. So I can't wait. It's so weird to just can't wait. I just can't wait for every Islander game. It's so weird.
It is weird, and again, like that game against the Sabres. How many times have we seen them play a game against the Sabres in February, and you lose, and they didn't play particularly well. They were only down 2-1 until about 4 minutes left in the third. They still could have come back and won it, but they didn't. And it was both incredibly reassuring to be like, well, hey, what are you going to do? You just get them next time. But also be really disappointed, like, oh, come on. We could have padded our first place lead even more with this win. You need to put in a little more effort. So it's been a fun ride, and I don't want to go off on a whole thing about it, but I mean, there's still people out there that love to troll Islanders fans, love to kick them kind of playfully, but also kind of like, playing into the we don't respect you by laughing about how much they don't respect you. Just ignore these people, honestly. Just have fun with it. Enjoy it. The trade deadline's a week away. There's kind of a big game a few days after that we're definitely going to talk a lot about in the coming weeks, so I don't want to spoil it. But just enjoy it. Like, don't worry about what, Guy X at The Athletic has written about this thing. Obviously, you should read Arthur Staple, but at the same time, there's a lot of people there that don't really care. Like, they don't get us. They don't care about us. They definitely don't care about the team. They're not tuned into, how this fan base has been feeling over the last, year, 18 months, 2 years, whatever it is. And this is our time. Like, we should enjoy this. And we got a good team that plays in a style that we have almost never seen from this franchise. And they go into every game with a chance to win. And that's something that, we haven't always been able to say. So don't worry about it. Just enjoy it. It should be a good time. So a couple of plugs real quick. We have a great thing on Lighthouse Hockey. You should read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. I keep forgetting to say that. Great thing went up today by Kerry about the Islanders' power play. It's kind of been a sore spot all year. They had a goal against Minnesota. They had 6 opportunities, so they went 1-for-6. But things look pretty well just, you know, you'd like to see a little bit more. But basically what it comes down to is, you know, there's a lot of structure there and they're operating kind of as a unit, which is great, but they just don't have people to put the puck in the net, which is a problem. So you should check that out. As always, he puts things into puts these numbers into terms that, you know, normal humans can understand. So it's great to read, and it was illuminating. I had never thought of it that way, but it was a pretty cool read. So you should check that out. March 16th, I want to say. Let me make sure I got this right. March 16th is, yes, Saturday, March 16th, Offside Tavern. Dan and Noel doing a live Isles Buzz podcast. You go watch a Red Wings Islanders game. You could stay for the live Isles Buzz podcast. Check that out. Nick Hershon, author of We Want Fish Sticks, is going to be there. That's going to be a fun time. You should definitely do that. March 16th at the Offside Tavern, which is, you know, the mecca of Islanders fans in Manhattan. So you should check that out.
So it's another weird thing is, like, I know those guys have done a really good job, but it's just another weird thing that there's an Islanders bar that exists, because I remember in the lockout year when they made the playoffs and they were good, and I was going out to watch games at different bars with some friends, just being like, can you put the Islanders game on? And, like, no joke, just people, just like bartenders being like, why? And like, really? Like, you know, we haven't had an Islander game asked for in years here. And legitimately, like that stuff happened, and now we got a bar. So it's great.
Manhattan's good like that because there's bars for everything. I had a friend who was a huge Cleveland – he was a big Cleveland guy, so he loved the Browns, Cavs, and all. And he a couple of times I went with him to a place called Brady's, I believe it was on the Upper East Side, that was a Browns bar. Like, the owner was from Cleveland, and she had all this, you know, Browns games on. Like, they got the top spot, they got top TVs, and I was always like, this is so weird. Like, this is this weird spot in the middle of Manhattan that's just all Cleveland all the time. It's just so. And how the hell did you find this? I forget how, but I was like, man, that's weird. And, you know, meanwhile, I'm the Islanders fan. Like, you know, I have people in my own family don't even want to watch Islanders games. So it's not like, it's kind of, this whole thing is kind of news to me. So, but yeah, the Offside, March 16th. If you've never been, you should definitely go. That's a good time to go. Watch Noel and Dan do their thing, and you know, it's kind of cool. It's a whole day. It's a whole little Islanders day for you.
And I keep seeing also those Islander meetups, like, more and more. Like, there's one in Milwaukee going on, I think, at the end of March. It's so cool. It's great.
Yeah, definitely check out the fan shots on the side of Lighthouse Hockey's homepage for more meetups, because Mike was organizing one in Jersey. We got some going on for the game on the 28th, so you should check that out. You know, there's always people out there, and that's what's another great thing about this season has been, is that people kind of coming out of the woodwork and, you know, finding each other, and maybe there's a meetup. You know, there's the meetup groups from Tampa and Philly and Raleigh. Like, these guys have kind of started a movement, and people are kind of doing it themselves, and getting ready to go, and, you know, getting into groups and having fun, because why not?
I think Islander fans will never, and you know, maybe I'm speaking for too many people, but I don't think Islander fans would ever be upset at somebody for, you know, who had given up on the team for coming out of the woodwork in a season like this, because hell, we went through the same shit you did, and it was crazy and it was horrible, and we understand, you know, exactly why you were like, this is not worth our time. You and I probably were very close to doing the same thing, you know. Like, this, it's basically just getting kicked while you were down after you were already kicked while you were down. And now, like, it's nice, and you know, this is what sports are about. It's supposed to be enjoyable. And
sure.
You know, so, like, you know, the more the merrier. The more the merrier.
I mean, if anybody's earned a season like this, it's been us. Let's put it that way, too. So there you go. There's a whole bunch of stuff. So this week's NHLNames.com NHL Name of the Week is...
Jujhar Khara cut off that pass.
Jujhar Khara of the Edmonton Oilers. NHLNames.com by our own John and Travis is your home for NHL name pronunciations straight from the play-by-play guys. Khara is kind of like, he's a guy who's been on the Oilers for a while now. He's sort of like their Casey Cizikas a little bit. Like, he's kind of a hard-working bottom six type. Seems like a good player. You know, he's always kind of the throw-in guy for a lot of trades from Oilers fans. But I saw his name on the list, and I'm like, yeah, I've always wanted to know how to pronounce this guy's name. So there you go.
Jujhar
Khara.
I obviously, Dan never tells me who these names are before the show, and so I'm doing this thing now where I guess it. I was going to guess Jacob Chychrun, and I don't know if that's the right way to pronounce his name, but I'm the Arizona Coyotes. That was my guess in my head.
Oh, well, I always do the game, you know, a guy that they're going to play. So a team they're going to play.
I should have put that together.
So that's for the Oilers game. I don't know who they're – I didn't bother to go. I feel like we all kind of know the Blue Jackets But they play the Blue Jackets twice more in March, so that's going to be rough. So good time to get a jump on them would be Thursday night. And don't forget to go to sneakyathletic.com. They got all the cool GOAT and Fort Never Lose apparel. You put in anxiety in the discount code box, and you could save yourself 10%. That's pretty cool. Sneakyathletic.com, anxiety in the discount box. Save yourselves 10%. Go there today. Okay. Anything else? Did we miss anything? Tell everybody your Twitter handle.
It's the Big Lee Basket with two E's.
The Big Lee Basket with two E's. You should follow Mike. He's been on a tear. He's been hitting him out of the park lately. You should check it out. Not just for the Horse Racing Insider stuff, but you should follow Mike. Just do it. It's he's criminally underfollowed. Very I would nice. Say.
I don't know. I like to keep a low profile.
I've been kind of sneaking back on a little bit to check things out, especially with the trade deadline going on. I responded to somebody the other day asking if we're on Spotify. We're not on Spotify because it would cost us money. So there you go. Maybe sometime in the future there might be some changes. We'll see what happens.
We did miss something. Very important. Sean Bergenheim. Sean Bergenheim running for Parliament in Finland. Which, you know, we're already late into the show, but good God, how great is that?
He is indeed. There is a story by Katie Strang, who used to cover the Islanders during Sean Bergenheim's time with the team, about his decision to run. And
this is her second Sean Bergenheim story this season, because she did a story on him holding out or something. The William Nylander thing. So, first of all, Sean Bergenheim, by the way, is a very handsome dude. The picture of him, I'm like, wow, he's really just a good looking guy.
He's the kind of guy who could not wear a belt with suit pants and still look good. Like most of us would look foolish, but he does not.
No, he's got the like perfect Scandinavian jeans thing going on. So good for Sean. We're definitely pulling for him. I have his autograph on my orange third jersey, along with Robert Nilsson, Brad Lukowicz, Eric Goddard is on there. Bruno, I have like 18 Bruno Gervais autographs. That's one of them. I'll whenever that election day is, I'll make sure I wear that jersey with his autograph on it.
Yeah, he's running, and he kind of got awoken after, you know, as his career was winding down, sort of like, you know, what am I gonna do next, basically. And he's trying to do better and trying to over there it's a different system, like there's multi parties and stuff, so it's I don't want to speak out of turn and get this wrong. Yeah. You just read the story; it's obviously very well written, but it's interesting.
The my favorite part was when I was, you know, I saw this. I can't remember who tweeted it out at first a couple of days ago, and then I was translated the article, but the article from the Finnish website refers to him as the 35-year-old ex-waiter.
What?
Yeah. I mean, here's the whole paragraph. It's Bergenheim, who played as an attacker, enjoyed his career as a member of the NHL, but was forced to end his career in 2018 as a result of a concussion, according to RKP, which is his party. RKP's announcement, the 35-year-old ex-waiter is currently an entrepreneur and focuses on education, health, and environmental issues in his election campaign.
That's pretty funny. That's Albert Einstein, former patent clerk. I guess there's another way. I don't know. That's pretty funny. I mean, there must be like a, was he a waiter or was it just like a translation?
I don't know. I like this. I mean, he like we were just saying, like the guy looks good in a suit. So he would make a great waiter at like a Finnish fine dining restaurant.
Well, and it's funny too, because like here we are talking about this guy who played for the Islanders. It feels like he played for the Islanders 20 years ago, but he's 35. Like he's quite a bit younger than me. And here he is, you know, he's had a whole playing career that was very successful. And now he's embarking on a brand new career. And it's like, it sounds like something, so he should be a lot older, but no, he's 35. It's not old, you know, but yeah, so there you go. If you were to pick one Islander who was going to get into politics, I'm not sure anybody would pick Sean Bergenheim, but I'm interested to see where it goes.
Yeah, I think Mike Fornabeo tweeted out. He's like, I think this makes the first Bridgeport Sound Tiger to run for Finnish Parliament, unless I miss a Tommy Pettinen run.
Yeah, right. I'm waiting for Joel Reklich to run for office, and then I'll I'll definitely move to whatever state he's running in. And he's from Wisconsin. So, all right. So when Joel Rechtlich runs for governor of Wisconsin, I'm going to move to Wisconsin just so I can vote for the Wrecker, because he had a great nickname. Wow. I had no idea. I just pulled him out of my ass, but I'm glad I did. So there you go. All right. Well, I think that's as good a place to end as any, I guess. Yeah. So thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. Thank you for your reviews, if you've left them, except for that one guy who gave us 1 star because he said we didn't watch all the games. Sir, I'm very sorry to tell you that we don't watch all the games. I have alerted our customer service department, and they're working on getting you a refund. Don't hold your breath, but there you go. But if you've left us a nice review, we really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll be back. Like I said, we're going to record Sunday night. We'll get to you Monday. It's a holiday for everybody, so it's probably a good time to get in there. The Islanders have 3 days off in between the game against the Oilers and their first game in Calgary next week, so it feels like a good time. Plus, trade deadline's around the corner. We'll see what happens. But again, thanks a lot. We really appreciate it, and we will talk to you again soon. All right, bye-bye.